Party people, and welcome to sunny Las Vegas. You find me at home in the backyard of the house. This is one of those 360 videos, so you can turn around and get a feeling for the backyard. We redid the backyard of the house about a year or two ago, and this is the perfect time of year where we can actually be outside in the evenings. The hot tub is usable. The pool is not, though, because it's too cold. It is 61 right now. We only have a solar powered pool heater, which means that the max it'll get up to is ambient air temperature. And because the high, like today's high, is only 76, the high just isn't that much anymore. So we don't bother using the pool heater. It's really too cold. So we shut that off during the winter, and this is just now for looks at this point. And then we usually like to throw parties out here. It's just a nice place to sit and watch movies and hang out in the hot tub and enjoy the afternoons. So let's get to your top voted SQL Server questions. Top voted question is from Aussie DBA, who asks, "I was saddened to hear of the passing of Andrew Clark, who surely had the best pseudonym in the SQL industry, Phil Factor." So that wasn't his only pseudonym. He also had Robin Pages, or Robin Page was one of his other earlier ones, which was a play on stolen pages. His articles were some of the first I read online, and I was impressed with his complete and clear explanations. Can you share your fondest memory of him? Several, oh man, probably a decade ago, I was introduced to him, and Tony at Simple Talk, I believe, said, "And by the way, this is Phil Factor." And before I knew it was Phil Factor, Andrew had an electric attitude about him. He wasn't physically outgoing as much as he was just crackling with interesting energy. You hear about people who have mischievous eyes or sparkling eyes. This dude, like, you could see the thoughts connecting like live wires, and he could barely contain himself with all the interesting thoughts he had. And the things that would come out of his mouth were just enchanting. He was so smart. And so I didn't get a lot of chances to spend time with him, only really at either SQL Bits or the PaaS Summit. And every time I was just like, I wish I lived in the United Kingdom so that I could spend more time with this guy and see more of his just electric, interesting energy. It was absolutely amazing to behold, and I've never seen anyone else with that same energy. It's just so neat. Next up, Elijah says that parallelism weights are the most common weight type on our server. My cost threshold for parallelism is set to 50, max stop is 8, and I want to gradually lower max stop to reduce weights. How can I convince our DBA, who's very hesitant to tune server-wide settings and prefers using Resource Governor?" Okay, I think you've sent this in before, and I don't think you're paying attention to when I answer your questions on the videos, but your DBA is correct. Lowering max stop further is not likely to make queries faster. At this point, you're focusing on the wrong thing. You really should check out my Mastering Server Tuning class, where I demonstrate parallelism and CX weights, but your core idea is simply wrong. You want to start, and if you want to prove it, take a query that's slow and try your own max stop hints. Try lowering the max stop settings and watch to see if the query goes faster. It's time for you to work on making the query faster as opposed to trying to reduce weights that aren't really going to matter. End users aren't going to high five you in the hallway in that particular scenario. Get to my training classes. DM Exec Coffee Stats says, "Back in February, you said something to the effect of you shouldn't use schemas to namespace tables. If I understood you correctly, is there a reason to prod my coworkers into undoing this practice, or should I just leave it be?" What I said was, prefixing things with prefixes does the same thing as putting it into schemas if all you're trying to do is use groups of names. There's no reason to use schemas. It's not like it's buying you anything. Now, if you're using it for permissions isolation, I get it. If you have different schemas that truly no one should be able to overlap, like you got some people who are salespeople, you got some people who are human resources, and they should never see each other's tables, then schemas can be a way to accomplish that. I've just never seen that in real life because people say, yeah, the salespeople should never see human resources, and human resources should never see human resources or sales data, except, and then they go into this big long laundry list of exceptions. And as soon as you start having to dealing with handling all these exceptions, what are you getting with schemas? It's not really simplifying anything. I don't ever tell people to stop. If you want to do it, that's fine. I've just never seen a situation where people went, whoo, thank God for schemas. Otherwise, our job wouldn't have been doable, would have been way too hard. I'm sure it's out there. I just haven't ever seen it. Who Moved My Cheese asks, we're currently evaluating a couple of different SQL Server monitoring systems. Do you have any preferences or opinions? And the ones that he names doesn't really matter. Because I work with different clients continuously, so I'm like an emergency room surgeon for SQL Server. Because I jump constantly from one client to another, I don't have the time to dig into their monitoring systems because often they're misconfigured or they weren't gathering data at that time or they're a pain in the rear end to use. I just don't look at monitoring systems. I get everything I need from the DMV. So I'm a terrible person to ask about that one. Next up, Aubrey asks, my Azure SQL databases are having a nervous breakdown from constant insert and update spam. I think you mentioned Stack Overflow batching stuff instead of being chaos gremlins. Which course of yours teaches you how to do batching? That's not a SQL Server thing. That's an app thing. If you want to queue up writes on the app side, you need to do that kind of work on the app side. That is not something that we do in T-SQL, so I can't point you to a course on it, unfortunately. Hate giving you answers like that that don't really answer what you're looking for, but it's, I always want to be clear that like that's just something that I don't do, so I couldn't even tell you bad resources on how to do it. Next up, Elwood says, any tips for finding fast and reliable internet when you're traveling for work, like overseas or on a ship? Yes, Reddit. You would not believe the number of subreddits out there for every conceivable topic. So, for example, if you're going to Iceland, there are whole Iceland subreddits. There are Iceland subreddits for locals as well as for visiting Iceland. And you'll find that the locals in countries like that are very willing to help. Same thing with cruise ships. There are cruise ship subreddits and also cruise ship employee subreddits, which can give you inside advice. In the case of cruise ships, for example, there are even subreddits set up for particular kinds of cruises that return every year and individual cruise ships. So you can go check in on there and ask someone to run you a bandwidth test. When you say finding fast internet on a cruise ship, it's not like you can do anything about it. It's not like you go, well, hold your phone this way and you're going to have faster internet. It's just either the ship has it or it doesn't, and you're kind of out of luck. Next up, Daniel says, in your post about max memory settings, you casually mention, I was wondering if anybody was going to catch that. You casually mention that you set this up automatically on your lab servers as part of agent setup startup. Are there any other settings that you use in this context? And would you recommend this for production environments as well? No, because in my lab, I'll constantly boot up. So I have like a SQL Server 2025 image, a SQL Server 2022 image. And then depending on the work that I'm doing or what VMs are cheaply available at the time, I'll boot up that saved image into different VM sizes. So sometimes it'll be a 4-core instance with 8 gigs of RAM or 16 gigs of RAM. Sometimes it's a 16-core instance with 128 gigs of RAM. So I have an agent script that just automatically sets max DOP and max server memory based on that. I don't set tempdb number of data files, for example. It just isn't, I just start with four and call it a day there. I don't have anything else that I would pass on to you. It's a lot of stuff that's specific to my environment. So for example, restoring the Stack Overflow databases, priming memory by doing a select count star from a large table with an index one hint, stuff like that, but just for my own purposes. Dopinder says, do you recommend any AI courses that are complementary for a SQL DBA? No, because the industry is changing too quickly. Right now, it's not cost effective to build a training course on something like AI because the state of the art changes too quickly. The tools that you use change too quickly. Your best bet there, when stuff is changing fast and furious, is actually YouTube. And the reason why that's better is because there, people are starting channels and they're growing their channels. They make money off of the ads, and then they can keep throwing out different videos all the time every week, reflecting the current state of the art and gather subscribers. And then that way their subscribers pays their ads, so to speak. But not only do I not have one specific for SQL DBAs, I don't even have one specific for tech in general. You really have to just go out to YouTube and describe what you're looking for there. Not Close Enough to Retirement asks, has setting a persistent sampling rate for a statistic ever gotten you across the finish line? Yes, in terms of 100%. Or something very low, just to make it, because all the data in the table is evenly distributed. He says, if so, please share the problem that it solved and how you determine the right sampling rate. Yes, attend my, which class is that in? I believe that's Fundamentals of Query Tuning. It's in Fundamentals of Query Tuning. Check out the Fundamentals of Query Tuning class. I don't remember which module it's in, but that's a short class. And so, and if you haven't seen it, you should probably watch the whole thing anyway. My Tea Got Cold asks, have you played around with SQL Server 2025's new optimized locking yet? Any thoughts? No, because when it came out, the documentation on it was so sketchy, and the examples that they used were so sketchy that I remember posting a comment. A friend of mine wrote a blog post about the feature, and I posted a comment, and I was like, dude, this didn't change the query's behavior at all. The query in your example still behaves exactly the same, whether you've got optimized locking or not. So what's the benefit? Now, since then, Microsoft has come out with additional examples that I haven't run yet and better documentation that talk about it being better at the server level to, if I remember right, don't quote me on this because I only kind of glanced at it, reducing the amount of memory required to track locks. But it still wasn't relevant to any situation that I'd ever seen for end users. So I went, I don't think it really merits worth my time yet. Now, I absolutely will. After release, I just got to triage the stuff that I'm focused on first. For example, one of the things that I'm absolutely all over is the improvements in column store are really impressive. So I got to ship training first on the things that are most impressive, that are going to make a big deal for you. And then the stuff that doesn't look as relevant to end user queries, I kind of hold off until later. In terms of timing, the Microsoft Ignite and PASS Data Community Summits conferences are both the same week in November. So it's pretty obvious that that's when the release date will be, in mid-November. That works out really well for me because I can ship a lot of stuff in November and then the first week in December. Then second week in December, I go off to China and Japan for about a month. Every year, Eve and I go off to China and Japan around that time, do the holidays and New Year's over there. So you won't see a lot of training from me then. And then January, when I get back, I'll be on 2025 stuff. I'm redoing all my mastering training classes with 2025 stuff. I've already finished redoing the fundamental stuff. Really having a good time with that. With 2025 information. Next up, drawing a blank. So, oh, I got to reconnect because I talked too long there and my phone timed out. I got to reconnect over to PolGab. Drawing a blank says, what happens when a memory-optimized table runs out of memory? Your transactions fail. Whoopsie. And it's real easy to test, too. You can set up a memory-optimized table, do it on, like, your desktop, and just load data into it continuously, and you'll see that your transactions start failing when you run out of memory. It doesn't, like, go to a swap or anything like that. It's one of the reasons why if you use it, you have to set up a resource governor to cap how much memory each database uses for their memory optimized tables, because any one database can do a denial of service attack on the rest just by filling up their own memory. It could be a boat says, if you were going to start all over again, where you're going to just starting your career all over again, would you pursue expertise in Postgres as opposed to SQL Server? I would really follow whatever my current employer was doing. It's way easier to get experience with the database server that your company is using than it is to get something experience on something you're not using. So the company I worked for, Sybase very early on. One of them was using Foxbase, I think it was called. I mean, like, I would just use whatever my company had access to, whatever we used in production, and then that's a better way to get experience there. Next up, Frugal says, I've just finished my first Azure SQL DB consulting job. Tools like SP Blitzcache were useful, but I found the experience painful. Simple things like tracing queries was much more difficult than it should have been, and the documentation sucks. How do you cope, or do you just avoid it? For pure Azure SQL DB, SP Blitzcache works just fine for me, and same thing with SP Blitzindex. I don't know what problems you were experiencing, and maybe reading the documentation may be more important. I'm not sure. It would all depend on what the problems you were having. So I'd be curious to hear more about that. I just don't have a good answer for you there. And don't put follow-up things in PolGab too, because that's clearly a longer discussion thing. If you're having a hard time doing something, that's probably where I would start, is what's the problems you're trying to solve, and then go read the documentation more and try to identify what those problems are. Benjamin asks, I just started a new job as a junior DBA. Congratulations. I was shocked to discover on my second day that there are several stored procedures on SQL Server that use linked servers to import from Oracle databases. What alternatives can I offer to leadership? Typically, people use SSIS for that, SQL Server Integration Services, in order to sync data between different sources. You could also build an SS or a C# app to do that kind of thing, or PowerShell or whatever, Python, whatever else language you want to use. But if you're just starting as a junior DBA, I would focus on asking your manager, what are the things that you're having a hard time with that you hired me to help make go away? Or to put it another way, at the end of my first year, what would I be able to walk into your office and say, I did these things, therefore I know you're going to give me a raise. What are the reasons you would give me a raise for at the end of this year? Focus on that rather than trying to pick tough political battles initially. Next up, Dopinder says, does high VLF count ever matter for TempDB? It's on Azure VM ephemeral drive. My guess, this is just a guess, so high VLF should only happen when the data file or when the log file has grown repeatedly over time. That sounds to me like the SQL Server has not been restarted in a long time, or the model database, which is where this gets drawn from, perhaps also has a problem too. So I would just make sure that you patch this thing, because you said it's on an Azure VM. Patch this thing. That'd be the first place that I'd start. Restart it. And I don't think you're going to see the VLFs recur. If you do, what you could do is stop the SQL Server service, delete the tempdb files, start them back up again, and the VLFs will be gone. Next up, T-Rex says, have you ever seen a contained database out in the wild? It seems like a dead feature. I have not. I have heard of them being used. I just have never seen it myself. It was a really good idea. It made sense for an idea, but the execution just wasn't very good. So I haven't seen it since. Next up, Update Stats asks, hi Brent, I have a query plan which is showing a columns with no statistics warning. I can see a stat for this column in that in Object Explorer, and when I update the stat, the warning in the plan disappears. Any idea why the statistic is being ignored? Something sounds fishy there with what you're telling me, because if it was a matter that the statistic just wasn't in place or hadn't ever been updated, or it could have been out of date, I'm not sure really what it was. I would need more information there for that, but I think maybe you got auto update stats turned off and it's, yeah, I can't think of a situation that would cause that. So if you can reproduce it, if it happens to you again and again, then I'd be more interested. But otherwise, it might have been just a ghost in the matrix. Big Blue Couch says, hey Brent, do you have any thoughts on Microsoft's use of SCDC to mirror on-premises databases to Fabric in SQL Server versions prior to 2025? Nope, I have no thoughts on it whatsoever. It's not like I can do anything about it. I don't. Well, so I don't have a lot of people using Fabric. And I know Microsoft likes to tout that there are a ton of people using Fabric, but the way that they capture that metric is just people in Azure SQL DB who try Fabric, who just like put it in once and then maybe they don't ever use it in production again. They're like, all of the Fortune 500 is using Fabric. No, they deployed it once. They're not necessarily relying on it on a day-to-day basis, or you're giving them consulting money, which is very common for enterprise agreements. You are giving them consulting money to try it, and you're giving them free cloud time. That is very different than 100% of the Fortune 500 actually relying on it for their mission-critical needs. So I don't want to say I don't think it's going to catch on. I don't think it's going to catch on. So I don't really care about investing time into old SQL Server versions and how they get data into a system that I don't care whether it lives or dies. Sounded really negative, didn't it? It did. It could be a boat asks, hey Brent, do you have any advice on working for a micromanager or a control freak? So in my consulting work, I haven't had to do that very often, and because I've been consulting for so long, I don't have really relevant evidence or really relevant experience. I would say if I was in your shoes and I was facing that problem, I would describe the situation to ChatGPT. I have a surprising number of friends who use ChatGPT as their therapist, that they'll start a session with ChatGPT and they'll confess, I'm having this problem with a friend or this problem with my boss or whatever. And they have a really long, and they keep this conversation open with ChatGPT so they can kind of build this bond, and ChatGPT knows about the kinds of ways that they solve things and the kinds of problems that they have. I'd probably start there. Confess to ChatGPT. I'm going to use you as a friend. Don't say therapist or psychiatrist or whatever, because it's going to immediately like, you should get a real mental health professional. But instead, just say, hey, I want to use you as a friend and say, I'm going to bounce some ideas off you about some problems that I'm having. let me start describing this and then ask me whatever clarification questions that you would ask as a helpful friend who is willing to give constructive criticism. Because ChatGPT has this problem where it's always like, yeah, buddy, you're always right. Everyone loves you. Must be someone else's problem. DBA Unsupported says, my new employer is a small shop with a lot of technical debt, mostly SQL Server 2008 and 2012 instances. They won't upgrade anything because the environment is stable. Any recommendations for the smoothest sailing? Yes, two questions. First, tell your security team, like you said, a small shop, but you know, find out who's responsible for security and just say, hey, look, I'm going to send you an email that says the stuff that we're running for our databases is not supported by Microsoft. Is there anything that you want to discuss with me first before I put it in writing? Because I have to put it in writing to protect myself. They're probably going to have a discussion with you, maybe with your manager or whatever, and then you're going to put down in writing to the security department and you're going to copy your manager, hey, just so that everybody's on the same page, the stuff that we're using is no longer supported by Microsoft. The reason why you want to do that is that if you haven't put it in writing, and if heaven forbid there's ever an insurance case, a lawsuit, whatever, they may blame you for running unsupported stuff, or they may say, you never told us it was unsupported. Because that's the first thing you're going to do. Second thing you're going to do is you're going to ask your manager and ask the accounting department, are we licensed with software assurance? Software assurance is the annual fee that Microsoft charges you to stay up to date on SQL Server. If you're paying software assurance, you may be able to move to newer versions of SQL Server. If you are not licensed with software assurance, then one of the reasons that the company doesn't want to do upgrades is because they haven't paid for it. You would have to pay a fortune, a small fortune, in order to get trued up in terms of licensing. So there are lots of small companies that do that where they just run the risk, and that would, for them, that's okay. So, and I don't blame them because database servers are expensive. Let's see here. We'll do one more. Dopinder says, is asking programming questions to AI just as helpful as reading the documentation? Absolutely, it's much more effective. I cannot tell you the number of times that I've gotten an error, and it's been so fast to troubleshoot with AI. I'll give you an example. I was teaching live one of my fundamentals classes last week, and while I was teaching it, I went off the cuff to answer a student question. I started typing in a demo, and I typed out a query, and I got an error in the query. And I'm like, that's not possible. This query cannot produce that error. What am I missing? I must be missing something obvious. And I pasted it into, I think it was GitHub Copilot. And Copilot was like, all right, here's one thing that could cause it. Here's another thing that could cause it. And I was like, wow, that totally makes sense. I was doing an average of an integer column, but I had so many rows that the sum of all of those rows exceeded an int. So SQL Server behind the scenes was trying to do the average with just an integer when it should have used a big integer. So I had to explicitly cast that value as a big integer to get around it. I had that answer in 15 seconds. And there's no, I mean, I could have spent an hour reading the documentation and I wouldn't have gotten the answer as quickly and clearly as AI was able to give it to me. I love anytime you get an error from a query, the first thing that you should do is copy paste that query into AI and say, here's the error that I'm getting. What could be causing this error? It's so good and so fast. All right, there we go. There's a whole handful of questions. I am now off to, I don't know what I'm going to do. It's fairly early. It's like 10 in the morning. I have no clue what I'm going to do. I have a nice open day on my calendar today. I looked at my calendar. I didn't have anything going on, and it had been a little while since I did an office hours. And I was like, oh, I'll just go do an office hours. It's nice outside. I have to go fold my laundry. That's right. I put the laundry in the dryer right before I came out here. So hopefully y'all had fun and learned something, and I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios.